Hi, my name's Pete Knapp, an air quality PhD student at Imperial College London. This series of podcasts is kindly promoted by the Grantham Institute, the college's hub for climate change and environment. Subscribe to receive future episodes and contact the Grantham Institute on Twitter with @Grantham_IC and me with @PeteK_AQ. This is Tipping Points, a podcast featuring interviews with people who've become environmental activists. What made them change? What are they doing now? And what do they hope to see in the future as we face possible breakdown of civilization and life on Earth? This first series focuses on scientists in the UK. With me in this episode is Valeria Scagliotti from London. Welcome.
Thank you, Pete. It's nice to be here.
If you can try to expand your life story to 3 minutes, that would be really interesting.
You might guess from my accent, I'm Italian. I grew up in a small town in the northwest side of Italy. But I must admit, I didn't really have a particularly strong connection with nature while I was growing up. I would actually define myself as a city girl, as I spend most of my life living in urban areas. And for a long time, I actually appreciate the benefits of being really well connected and having all the commodities fairly close to me. I really liked studying scientific subjects at school, especially math, chemistry, and biology. And again, I was always more attracted to the micro world of cells and all the processes that, and you know, reactions that happen in those little tiny blocks that build up all the living things in the planet. So I ended up doing my bachelor and my master degrees in biotechnology in Italy. And then I moved to London almost 8 years ago now to do a PhD in molecular biology. And I think also what pulled me a lot towards the study of biology at a more molecular level was spoiler alert, the most classic of the cliché, which is I wanted to understand and cure human disease, which is something that often molecular biologists fail. It had a lot to do with the fact that my hometown in Italy had one of the main industries that was manufacturing asbestos. As you probably know, asbestos causes a type of lung cancer for which there's actually no cure at the moment. So if you were born in Casale, which is where I'm from, or in the surrounding areas, probably at some point, either you or someone close to you will get ill. And actually, yeah, I personally lost my grandma and two uncles for that. What has made me always really furious about it was to know that the owners knew about how dangerous the asbestos was, and they never did anything apart from living far away and getting richer and richer. I can say I've experienced firsthand how greedy and disrespectful some people can be. I thought I had a clear path in my head about what I wanted to do in my life, to an academic career, so become a researcher and maybe at some point having my own group. And I came to London to do my PhD with that idea in mind. At the time, I was totally unaware of the state of the world and how bad the situation was. And I actually have to admit that I was flying often because I was going home for weekends to see my family in Italy. I was eating a normal diet. I actually was banking with Barclays, which is, as I discovered later, the largest investor in fossil fuel in Europe. All of this is something I really struggled to come to terms with, how ignorant I was in the past. And then a couple of years ago, I found out about Extinction Rebellion and I started looking more deeply about what they were saying. And then I discovered Scientists for Extinction Rebellion, of which I'm a member of now. And this threw all my life upside down. So now I'm reconsidering all my life choices and my future choices. I feel it's an emergency and I really want to help out.
Are you thinking then about changing or shifting your career more towards something environmental?
Yeah, still really confusing. One thing is to improve the sustainability in the lab. Research environments are actually really, really expensive in terms of energy and waste production. So they consume 3 to 10 times more than a normal office area. And then the amount of plastic we go through every day is just mongoose. I started volunteering in what is called Sustainability Champions at King's College London. This is something I would really like to do, possibly as a future career. I've started a course in soil biology because the state of the soil around the world is really, really crazy. We basically have dirt, not soil anymore. For a long time, they didn't even look at the biology of the soil. They just thought that microorganisms were living there without doing anything. And now they start realizing that actually are really important and we need to take care of them.
I wonder if you talk much about individual behavior or government inaction at work.
I've been talking about the climate crisis and the ecological crisis and what the governments around the world are not doing for basically all our lunch breaks in the past year. They are really supportive. They seem not hating me so far. I did a research update this week and I decided to split into two. So the first part I was actually presenting my data, and the second part I decided to talk about the situation of the climate and ecological crisis. It was really broad, but I hope it will create a chance to more conversations in the future.
And what are you hoping would be the result of presenting?
I think keep raising awareness, and I hope they might have conversations with other people, creating some sort of events or more occasion to talk about it. I actually suggested maybe to have meatless Monday for lunch.
How does that go down? Do your colleagues kind of think, oh, here she goes again? Or do you think they think, yeah, that's a good idea, we should do that?
Everyone agreed, at least in front of me, that we should definitely talk more about it. And I think the feeling was that they knew and they wanted to do something, but sometimes they don't know what to do and it can feel overwhelming and depressing. And they said, yeah, we can change diet, but, you know, what's the point if the governments and whoever is in power doesn't do their part of the job?
How do you respond to that?
Individual changes are definitely important, because if everyone would change their individual behaviors, then we would see the effects. It helps you to kind of live better your daily life and you kind of stand up for your values. We need to ask and demand for system change, because otherwise everything will be too complicated. It also is not fair to drop all the weight on people, because it's not actually their fault.
Yeah, I've changed my diet quite significantly. Cooking tasty food without meat or dairy has become a very useful skill. However, I do miss cheese, especially pizzas.
Yeah.
But have you taken similar steps in your diet? And have you cut things out completely, or do you still sometimes consume unsustainable foods?
I cut out all the meat. I switched to plant-based milk. I've been trying plant-based cheese, although, yeah. I'm not actually a big fan of cheese, but I really like mozzarella. And being Italian, I think, like, I have to say, the pizza, I still get the normal pizza. I buy eggs sometimes, but I try to buy them locally. I also started to buy fruit and veg through a veg box scheme. So everything is grown as local as possible and is organic. And also it helps a lot to reduce the amount of plastic you produce.
Which company do you use?
It's called Growing Communities. So they actually grow as much as they can in Hackney. So this is as local as it can get for me. And whatever they cannot grow here or in the UK, it's imported from other countries through organic and fair trade schemes.
Yeah, I mean, meat and dairy is a huge part of Italian cuisine.
Yeah, my region is crazy.
And fuge is a huge part of Italian culture. So do you feel that you're kind of losing your roots by changing your diet?
Yeah, we do eat a lot of meat, especially in the north where I'm from. You can have meat for starters, first course, main course, almost even dessert. We also eat a lot of fruit and veg. So you can make great recipe cutting out meat from them.
Have you been back home for, you know, Christmas or a big party or anything since you changed your diet?
Yeah, I've been. I have to say I struggle a bit when I'm in Italy. I just eat whatever is available. my mom, she's trying to understand my point of view. So, for example, she doesn't buy milk for me anymore, and she buys plant-based milk. Sometimes there is meat, but it's not red meat. It's still a problem.
Have you had difficult conversations with anyone in your family about not just diet, but also things like flying and other heavily carbon-intensive activities?
I talk about the issues and how angry and frustrated I am basically all the time. Every time I call my parents, we end up having this type of conversations. I see sometimes them rolling their eyes, like, here she goes again. Not in a bad way. I think they don't get the extent of how serious the situation is. That's my feeling. In summer, when I went back home, I decided to go by train, which was a great experience, but really expensive compared to how much I would have spent flying to Italy. So I recognize it as a privilege because I'm alone. I have a normal / good job. So I can afford to get a train and spend, you know, 10 times more what I would pay for a flight. When I started talking about my desire to go by train and not fly, I would get the answer of that plane will fly anyway. So why are you not taking it? And I guess, yeah, it's true that plane is flying anyway, but until there are enough people saying we want to get on a train and not on a flight, then probably things won't change.
Have you ever been accused of being radical or extreme?
I wouldn't define myself actually as a radical person. I've always been really kind of in the middle. I am getting angrier and angrier now. So I feel like I'm becoming a bit more radical than I used to be. I see people who are more radical than me, not in a bad way. Like, actually, sometimes I really admire people that have the courage to do what I feel is necessary. And sometimes I don't have the courage to do.
What's made you angry?
Just all the injustices that I see around and the fact that the situation is clear. The solutions are there, you know. We could make the situation much better than it is if we just start to act. And the fact that we are not acting upon the crisis is really frustrating.
Could you describe your mental journey then through learning about the climate and ecological emergency and the contributing factors and history and how they're interconnected, the predictions that they make and how far we've gone already?
So it's definitely overwhelming, I would say, at the beginning, especially when you go from not knowing anything about it to start reading about it more and more. And the more you read, the more you want to know. And then you see how bad the situation is. And I think that also mixes up with your own sense of guilt for not knowing, and been really hard, and it still is, I would say. I go through moments where I also feel lost and that we're never gonna get to a better place and it will be too late and all the horrible things that might happen in the future. I personally don't have kids, but I have two nieces, and I'm often thinking about how their future would look like. It's a lot to take, I think. I have issues where I always feel guilty for a lot of things, sometimes right, sometimes wrong. So yeah, I took it very personally about my previous choices, what I've done in my life. I still struggle sometimes when I think about how many flights I took. I still have the feeling that I'm not doing enough, and it's something I feel basically every day, that I could always do more with my job and my life and social media and everything. But at the same time, it's a risky loop because then you feel you're not doing enough and you want to do more and more and more. And then you end up kind of putting your fingers in a lot of different things, but not really focused to any of them. You actually end up wasting more time and not be really efficient. Definitely being part of a group like Scientists for Extinction Rebellion, or any campaign group helps a lot because you're surrounded by people who care they understand you and who understand the situation. So you're not alone. This is valuable, I would say. I think we need to come to terms with the idea that the future we will have is not what we've been living so far. Our lives will be very different from what our parents have lived.
What kind of things do you think are going to be so different for you personally?
It's hard to say. I would imagine myself traveling around the world because I love traveling. I guess everyone loves traveling. And I know it's a privilege, and a lot of people around the world never took a flight in their life, and I took many. But yeah, it's something I cannot really see myself doing anymore now. And it's a tiny sacrifice compared to what people are actually experiencing. There are people across the world now who are already experiencing increasing heat waves and natural disasters that will happen in the future. But actually, they're already happening in Africa, in Asia, and across the world. I think we often forget about the fact that what our action here and now are actually causing already a lot of pain to other people across the world.
Yeah, people tend to think, you know, when they see a news story of a flood or a drought in a far country, they think, oh, that's sad, for about 2 seconds, and then just get on with eating their cheeseburger or something. People haven't really made the connections, I don't think, yet, between the frequency of disasters around the world and their own individual behaviour. Have you got any idea about how in future people will make those connections?
We will experience more of these issues as well, like firsthand. So there will be areas in the UK which will be flooded more and more, and we will have heat waves in the UK. And we will have crop failures around Europe and all sorts of horrible things that happen now somewhere else and will happen just where we live. So we will be forced to see them with our own eyes. And I guess this will make us realize how bad the situation is, and hopefully people will start to act. But I'm worried that when we realize, it might be a bit too late.
Now, scientists like to see connections between things. Right? It's exciting and fascinating to see how abstract stuff is connected together. But can you describe any connections that have fascinated you in learning more about the climate and ecological emergency?
So, you know, exploitation of people in industries is the same mechanism that drives other people to exploit, you know, the Amazon and nature. So it's just a type of behavior that is really destructive for everything and everyone. And you see that you have a decreased number of flying insects around, but you never think about how important they are for what we eat. You know, like 70% of food production depends somehow on pollinators. I remember when I was young, and I was driving with my parents, we would have the windscreen completely full of mosquitoes and flying insects, and now it's much less.
Did you have any apprehension about joining XR? Do you see any activities that they were doing where you thought, I don't resonate well with that, or I don't feel like I identify with that group?
As we all know, there have been a few actions where I was not agreeing with them. So they were actually, I didn't like the usual one on the tube. I remember the first time I went to a sort of mini festival they had. It was in Greenwich, actually. And it was my first time where I went to an event organized by an XR group. And I could see, you know, the stage was powered by solar panels. And then they had vegan food and there was not plastic around. And I was actually really surprised because it was an example of people who are demanding something and they're trying to act at their best. And I always had this impression of like a really welcoming environment. My personal experience was being always welcoming and the atmosphere was always really overall positive.
I'd like to hear more about your experiences protesting. When did you start to do this? And has it always been a part of what you've done, or has it only been a recent thing for you?
Would definitely not define myself as an activist before. The first protest I attended to was the October Rebellion in 2019. So I was just going to Trafalgar Square before going to work or after work or during the weekends and be one person more in the streets. And I was still finding out more about the reality of the crisis and what their demands were. Just after that, I joined both my local group and XR Scientists. I've also been to some of the BLM protests, and I could see how this has become a central part of Extinction Rebellion as well. Again, I was really ignorant about all the issues Black and other minorities would experience. I mean, you know, they are subjected to injustices, but the level of injustices they experience in just their normal life is ridiculous. And again, it's one of the things that are really strongly connected. Racial injustices and social injustices are often related to climate injustices as well. It's the same mechanism where we exploit and we mistreat people and environment all over the world.
How do you feel then about the about parts of the police crime sentencing and courts bill?
Oh, this is really frightening. I really don't see this bill compatible with a country that defines itself as a democracy, because no matter what they say, it actually undermines a lot the right to protest and the freedom of people to express their opinions and their ideas.
How exactly does it do that?
Basically, now he puts limitation on literally how noisy a protest can be. So the Home Office can decide that a protest is too noisy and make it illegal. And it's a shocking contrast thinking that you have Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, statues like that just outside Parliament. If you do anything to a statue, or if you participate to what's been defined then an illegal protest according to the Home Office, you can risk up to 10 years in prison, which is absolutely crazy.
During my protest there, I was wearing this face mask with a union flag on it in a way to try to engage perhaps more with conservative passers-by. When they saw my sign that said, "Do I annoy you?" they engaged quite well, because they felt that freedom of speech was something that they championed as conservatives, and the right to protest is something else. And one guy even said to me, "Churchill would be proud of you." So what's interesting there is people on both sides of this political spectrum have a real problem with the bill. Even the police I spoke with said, "We don't like it because it's too vague and far too open to interpretation. One police officer might do this and one police officer might do that in the same situation." They have a real problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, also, what's the definition of a serious annoyance or like a too loud protest? There are no clear definitions in the bill, and it's all kind of in the hands of the Home Secretary. And I think it's far too much power in her hands.
Another issue with it is the lack of publicity that it had.
Yeah.
It was barely mentioned on BBC. Why do you think that is?
There have been a lot of issues with BBC and what BBC is reporting. Like a lot of the protests and a lot of the environmental issues as well have not been exposed on the BBC website. And they want to sell it as they are neutral and they are impartial. But I don't think this is the definition of impartial, because, for example, reporting on environmental crisis is factual. I mean, those are factual things. So it's not taking any sides, is actually reporting what's happening. So I think it should be their duty to do that.
You mentioned earlier that you changed your bank from Barclays.
Yeah.
This seems to be quite a good thing for individuals to do. Who did you change to?
I spent my Christmas holidays just looking at all the options for a good ethical bank. I've heard about three others before, and this is actually ended up to be my choice. They only invest in projects that are nothing to do with fossil fuels or anything that will damage the environment. You have to pay a small fee every month. And actually, I remember listening to a talk where they said other banks where you don't pay the fees just hide the cost somewhere else. For example, they have high interest in if you have overdrafts or stuff like that. The people who struggle will end up paying.
How did you do your learning about the crisis? Was it through reading the IPCC reports or YouTube videos or, you know, where did you get your info?
I really have to thank Emily Grossman and all the other scientists for putting together the Emergency on Planet Earth document, because it's really, really useful as a resource, and it's quite broad, and you can find out a lot of information, and it's really well written and really clear. Yeah, we are scientists, but it's definitely not my field. So, you know, reading a paper, an original paper about some climate models can still look quite threatening even to me, even if I'm a scientist. There's this idea that because you're a scientist, you know everything about science, and it's so far from the truth.
Getting closer to your field, but still nowhere near exactly your expertise, I'd like to know more about how likely you think that the next pandemic might be, and what even caused that? How was that related to the climate and ecological crisis?
Well, it's definitely related to the way we farm, and a lot of people have blamed, you know, Chinese because they eat like bats. But actually, the way we farm in the West, like these intensive farmings and all the animals crammed together in really small places, is basically a paradise for a virus or for any sort of disease. The way we farm is also helping a lot in increasing the likelihood of future pandemics. And also the fact that we are destroying natural habitats so much through deforestation, changing it to agricultural fields everywhere in the world, made humans to become closer contact with animals. A virus that, for example, for a bat, then if it jumps into humans, it might become very, very dangerous. And we've seen that. We also seen it with Ebola. Yeah, we are really destroying habitats at a huge speed. So we will have to expect more of these pandemics happening. There are other diseases like malaria, that is a tropical disease, and the fact that the whole world will be warmer means that there will be more areas where the mosquitoes can live. So we can see probably in the future a spreading of tropical diseases also in areas where now those diseases are not so common. And there is a different problem of bacteria becoming antibiotic resistant. And this is also due to use of antibiotics, again, for example, for animal farming, just because they live in so poor condition that they have to be treated with antibiotics, otherwise they will get ill all the time. But then these help bacteria to become antibiotic resistant. Yeah. We know how it was before penicillin was discovered, and you would die for an infection almost, and we forgot about that. Is something we shouldn't want to experience.
What kind of things do you see happening within the next few years that you're really excited about?
Oh, that's a hard question. I am really glad I took this course of permaculture and the other one on soil biology. There's a huge potential. I hope I would find a way to feel I'm doing my part. So I wish everyone can find their way to use their skills in a useful manner. And also I used to think that I could not do anything because I didn't study ecology, because I didn't study climate, but that's not true. You know, this crisis will affect us all. And because of that, no matter what job you're doing, no matter where you are, you have something you can contribute to.
And with that, Dr. Valeria Scagliotti, thank you very much.
Thank you, Pete.
Music from Climate by Eric Ian Walker. Commissioned by the Climate Music Project, we communicate the sense of urgency of the climate and ecological crises through the emotional power of music. More to be found at ericianwalker.bandcamp.com and climatemusic.org.